8, 9, 10.
Well, let me get right into this then. Last time I was just about to ask you a question about a quote you had made in 1975. And you said that racism has disappeared from the political rhetoric in Atlanta, that race is the underlying force in the area's politics, no matter what the rhetoric. Would that be a good description of that period, 1975?
First of all, I cannot remember that I said that exactly that way.
Okay. Came from the Constitution. But.
Well, in that case, I'm certain I didn't say it that way. That's the only certainty about it. If it's quoted the Constitution, then it's a misquote. Let me tell you what I would agree is that race as a part of the rhetoric is out of the question. Anybody who runs a racist campaign, for example, and such as Sam Marcel tried, Atlanta's too young to die, this kind of thing, is in deep trouble. That race is a part of almost every major political issue, however, remains the fact. Now, whether I would say that it is the, what did you quote there?
No matter what the rhetoric, race is the underlying force in the area of politics.
The underlying force in the area of politics. The underlying force. To the extent that that is exclusive, I wouldn't say that. Now, whether I said it, I cannot remember. That's the gospel truth. The concept, though, I can buy into that race is a major underlying force in the area's politics. Now, this also goes back to a statement that Ivan Allen made, that in all of the years that he was mayor, he could not remember a single major issue that did not involve race as a major consideration.
Certainly back in that period. How about particularly in relation to annexation issue as an effort to dilute black political power and the desire of white businessmen expressed a number of times to create a metro-wide government? Did you see race being the underlying factor there?
Well, to get me into commenting on motivation doesn't really help anybody. That's pure speculation. And speculation is not analytical. Would I believe that some people believe that? Yes. Do I believe that some people are not motivated by that? The answer is yes. So I think it varies from person to person. Now, as a major issue, race plays on the black side and the white side a significant role in this whole question of annexation, consolidation, and metro-wide government. And the metro-wide government issue is not really even on the board for discussion, because it is such a political impossibility that it's not going to happen. And the other thing is, the business community, or the few people who talked about it, and we can kind of narrow that down to Carl Sanders,
right?
Okay. Nobody else seriously bought into it. Talked about it, yes. But to express the belief that it could happen or would happen, I remember when Carl Sanders introduced the idea in a major speech in the Atlanta Symphony Hall. I was on the panel that responded to it.
So,
okay. And he wanted to do everything with an I-285. I asked him what were the economic consequences. He couldn't tell me. He had done no research on that. I asked him what were the consequences, the planning point of view, one thing or another. What could you cut back? You know, how many people would you save? If you're going to unify, consolidate, and so forth and so on, and therefore save money, where do you save it? How do you save it? How many personnel do you cut? Where do you, none of that research has been done.
So what was the reason for the,
I don't want to speculate about what his reasons were.
But
I'll stand behind the statements that I made that day. Now, let me come on to the question of consolidation. I am for consolidation, Atlanta, Fulton County, and all the other 9 municipalities. Not only for, but I have been for ever since I ran for office in 1969 for city office. Okay. In the black community, there will be some opposition based on the dilution argument. I believe that a campaign that will educate on that issue will eliminate that as a serious objection today. I think that the fear is the black vote would be diluted to the point of being inconsequential. And the fact is that that even if all of Fulton County, all of the other nine municipalities in Atlanta were consolidated today, this would still be a predominantly black government jurisdiction.
Yeah, Metro Atlanta was still predominantly black?
Well, that new government, all of Fulton, Atlanta, the new Atlanta, which would include Roswell, Alpharetta, the other Atlanta, the other seven municipalities, and Fulton County, so the 10 municipalities, would still be around 53-54% black. Now, there's no way, in my opinion, no way in the world, point number two is the major opposition, in my opinion, to the idea, does not and will not come primarily from inside Atlanta. It will come from the outside.
Okay.
And I think any chance to get Alpharetta and Roswell in is non-existent. That is voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
What I do think would be a fair way to do it would be to let everybody vote.
I agree.
As one voting group, not as separate voting groups. And everybody who is running in Fulton County, whether they live in a municipality or not,
mm-hmm.
vote. Or whether they want to see consolidation.
I don't think there's been a vote since 65, isn't it? I believe some of the areas. Well, Sandy Springs certainly has been vehemently opposed on a number of occasions. let me get on to something else.
So on the question then of whether race plays a part, the answer is with some people it does, with some people it's not an issue now. Not, I mean, on this issue of consolidation and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But is the issue generally analyzed with a careful eye to the racial implications? The answer is yes, and that's a matter of reality. Because on both sides of the aisle there are still anxieties. We had anxieties.
Justified,
I think one of the roles of leadership, one of the roles that I intend to play, is trying to get leadership on this issue.
Okay.
But doing our homework first to careful analysis and then to move on to stake out a position again. I've written four annexation plans, or maybe it was only three, which never really got out of committee. And even the least offensive one, North the Chattahoochee, west of the Chattahoochee, south to Buckner Road, which was the fallback position, never even got out of committee.
Well, the original annexation proposals, I remember back when Sandy Springs was being suggested as annexation, the Hotfield went around, they're still alive, suggesting that Sandy Springs had to come in to dilute the black population, black land population, and it was expressed in those terms particularly. So it's no wonder, really, that annexation is still seen in racial terms.
Yeah.
It was proposed in those terms.
Well, it's the motivation in many places has been that, has been racial.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't mean just in Atlanta, but even across the nation.
Absolutely.
And on the other hand, you can't say that's motivation where in a place like Portland.
not really Portland.
where you and I know both black people, so... you've got different situations in some places and other states where the black population is truly negligible, less than 1%, less than 2%. A fear of a black takeover or something is not a part.
Well, then again, in Texas, it's been the Hispanics that have been the...
Or the minority takeover.
Right, yeah. Minority takeover. Let me ask something else about given the initial White House quality that I've seen evidence in the newspaper, I was curious why there was a charter reform in 1973 which strengthened your power as mayor. I mean, just when a black man was coming in as mayor, the charter has changed, your powers are strengthened. It didn't seem to click in terms of this fear of a black mayor at the same time that the charter is being reformed to give you more powers. Why the congruence of those two forces?
Well, if your question is couched in... if your question moves from an assumption Is that the motivation behind a charter revision of racial? Then you would have to look at what the racial motivation was,
mm-hmm.
and what was the strategy behind it.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that there had not been a charter revision in 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot tell you what the racial motivation, if any, was behind the Charter Revision Commission, unless it was a limitation on terms, with the theory being in case you get a black, now this is, you know, again, it's pure speculation here. I'm not even sure if it serves any useful purpose. The answer is, I don't know the answer to the question.
I was just curious.
And there was strong black participation in this charter revision plan.
Yes.
One of the major moving parties behind it, of course, was former state representative Grace Hamilton. And her motivation was good government, I think, by and large. Strict separation of power is creating a strong mayor form of government.
Mm-hmm.
Was a move in the right direction, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It seems logical.
But it did impose limitation, with therefore presumably more opportunities to elect a chief executive officer.
Yeah. But it did enhance your powers.
Yes.
And I would think the handwriting was on the wall that a black was going to be elected mayor in that particular.
I'm not sure that that was,
it was not accepted, isn't it?
Accepted as gospel.
So that might be the explanation. To strengthen your hand at a very time when the white elite was fearful of a black man. But
that does not mean that that was the motivation.
I'm not speculating about it.
You know, if you sat around and rummage around one's mind about what could have been motivations, that'd be hard to say, but the minutes of the debate
mm-hmm.
within the Charter of the Commission, Amish Commission, no local elected official was allowed to participate as a member, ought to reveal some insights.
Well, I've seen some of that, and there's no mention of race at all.
Yeah. Well, I don't, it had been 100 years, there was a need for a charter revision.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, one or two features of it may have, in the minds of certain people, may have given a certain more favorable atmosphere for certain other things to happen
mm-hmm.
than would have a different system. But I have no way of knowing that.
Okay. Let me deal with this too. There were charges from the white power structure in the early period of the administration that you were anti-white. We spoke about that last time. You were causing businesses to leave Atlanta. And there was the Ivan Allen comment to business leaders in 1974 at that meeting you just mentioned, that some of us have gotten too concerned with wanting the city government to fail because it's black. That was his comment, 1974. How was that tension eased? How was the racial harmony, if at all, restored? What did you do?
Well, let me just say that a comment like the one Ivan Allen made was a welcome comment.
Mm-hmm.
That was a gutsy thing for him to say.
He brought it out to the surface.
I suppose, right. Because that's precisely what the majority of black leaders in Atlanta believed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Vietnam-type burn and reclaim strategy. Let the city go to hell, blame it on the blacks, and then we'll come back and rebuild it. We'll come back and reclaim it.
Do you think that we're going through that type of thing?
Well, I'm going to say they. Let me be sure that you understand what I'm saying. I'm not ascribing this to any great group of people. Because I don't believe in a great group of people believed it. But I think the two or three or four or five, six, maybe even more, influential business leaders, especially in a group called the Loose Group, especially, but not exclusively, that group. Would have bought into such an idea.
Now, the Swiss group, you know?
If they would have, at that time, Dillard Munford, and a few others.
So angry with they were at a black victory.
Well, they're, and philosophically opposed.
Yeah.
This was a major finance backing group in the southeastern U.S., the Nixon and Reagan. And, but I want to be sure that you understand that I'm not ascribing that just to that group, nor am I assuming anyone in that group believed that.
But it was accepted by some.
No question. In our mind. But the point was, it was an influential white leader who said this openly. And the black community was, now that alone didn't change the atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
but that was a factor which helped. Now what did we do? We just did best we could on a day-to-day basis. We organized, tried to increase personal contacts, got more groups organized, got more black power structure, help in a more aggressive way through the Atlanta Action Forum.
Okay. That function even back then?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you tried to establish contacts with the business leaders, let's say?
Did establish.
Did establish and tried to calm their fears, I imagine.
Precisely. At the same time, trying to hold true to what we believe was the right direction for Atlanta.
My impression was that they felt you, the blacks were taking over the city, and your feeling was that that's not the case. The blacks just wanted their equal share of what was.
No. When you say they, the danger is that we're referring to a monolithic group, and the Atlanta power structure, in my opinion, never been monolithic. There have been significant numbers of people in the power structure of Atlanta who may believe a certain way and who probably did believe that blacks were taking over the political structure group, because in fact, black political power in Atlanta is pretty well established.
Mm-hmm.
Black economic power is not well established.
And that's where you were born, in
terms of these people. Well, that's where Atlanta was vulnerable. Because this is the first time ever that economic political power had been separated from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So you had groups that were not familiar with each other on a broad basis. I mean, we had the Action Forum and so on, but I'm talking about broadly familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Groups which were within the context of American history had been antagonistic
mm-hmm.
toward each other. One because it was the oppressor, and the other because it was the oppressed. Now in charge of two forms of power. One with the political power, one the economic power. First time in history of Atlanta that's been separated out from each other. How do you deal with that? The power structure didn't know any more than we did. We need to understand, as we look back on this situation, without necessarily just trying to point fingers, that we also had human beings groping for answers to questions that were even unfamiliar. Not only were the answers unfamiliar, but the questions were not even familiar.
I don't want to apply a demonic...
I'm hearing you. But my point is that attitudinally, you know, one can kind of get caught up in, and I think of this in terms of friends of mine and so forth, as we think back over the, we start pointing figures and all this, we also have to back off for a minute and say, wait a minute. The white business community didn't do right on this issue, that issue, that issue, and that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And in a number of cases, the motivation may have been racial.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of that reality, though, is that frankly, they didn't know anything different.
Well, I mean,
now, this has been an educational, well, that's the gospel truth. What else do they know?
They have spent years working with the black community, supposedly this.
As a subservient community.
Yeah, so
that's the difference.
Paternalistic work.
Precisely. Now, all of a sudden, you've got somebody who's not working under you, but with whom, but with whom.
So that goes into the outside as well.
Precisely. Not, they don't work for me anymore. You know, my community can look at them and see it, not even analyze it properly. They used to work for me, but now I got to work with them. How do you work with somebody who used to work for you? So they have had a period of groping also. And I guess, you know, for those who are Christian or who believe in the Judeo-Christian concept or ethic of forgiveness, I hope that as we look back in time, we're not going to be caught up in hatred and caught up in vitriolic retribution. Mm-hmm. And even as low down as some things were that happened, the future belongs to those who are going to be able to put it behind us. Okay. And to say, I may not have liked what you did, you may not have liked what I did, but each of us was groping for the right way to deal with each other. And I think that in Atlanta today, by the way, for all of our problems historically, still compared to every other major city in this country, is ahead without question.
And a good part played by you, no doubt about it.
We worked on it real hard. We spent a lot of time trying to ease white anxiety. You know, if you ask me how do we do it, I mean, there must have been 100 different ways.
Okay. But it was done.
And we also spent a significant portion of our time making sure that the black community knew, not a major portion of the time, we spent some time, I never cease to be amazed by the mother wit, the common sense of the Afro-American community. It's got to be born of having survived in slavery, mm-hmm. having survived through years of post-slavery oppression. But you'd think that one had to spend a lot of time explaining to the black community, don't get upset when I'm over here talking to the power structure. I'm not selling you out. Don't you worry about it. Don't worry. That was not necessary.
But there must have been pressure on you to move a little faster.
No, yeah. The pressure on me was a pressure born of my recognition of the need to eliminate the problem mm-hmm. without delay. Mm-hmm. I tried to negotiate, and I don't mean just a day or two. Most people don't know, but with the banks, for example, I tried to negotiate for 18 months with zero improvement.
But that says a lot by itself.
Yeah, but see, that's not well known, it's not well appreciated. And I wasn't trying to put my foot in somebody's tail just from day one. We were trying to get the job done, we were trying to do it in a cooperative way, and they didn't know how to relate to me. Yet they blame me for not being able to relate to them.
I gathered that from excerpts from that conference.
Now I have grown and matured, and I have looked back on this with a greater understanding now that some of these guys who knew it all didn't know it all. Some of the guys who run multi-billion dollar corporations, or whatever, didn't know how to deal with the Maynard Jackson. Could not relate. Psychically could not relate to a fella who represents, in terms of background, training, character development, everything that they say they want in a mayor. Okay?
Right.
All right. If I had been white on several key issues, this mainly revolved around the affirmative action thing. Mm-hmm. When most of the white support that I had in the power structure, I emphasize that, the white community is not monolithic either. Mm-hmm. even the white power structure had problems with me. Most of them. I still had two or three friends who remained with me, who was a power structure.
Paul Austin?
Paul Austin was one. Mm-hmm. Woodruff didn't really relate to anybody. He was kind of almost too old to do so. A couple of other people who always wanted to play a very quiet role.
So they supported you during the campaign and they stuck with you afterwards?
Precisely. The point was, at a certain point, where these issues got very hot, many of the white leaders who disagreed with what we were doing, dealt with it by calling me arrogant as a rationale for their walking away, for their deserting me and the issue.
So they didn't want to deal with the issue?
They didn't know how to deal.
So you became anti-white then?
That's the only way they could rationalize what they were doing.
Of course, which you would
I mean, that's my analysis.
You would not have faced if you were white, of course.
Not only would not have faced if I were white, but they would have stuck in and they would have known how to deal with each other, and that's the way they should have dealt with me. That is, go and close the door and call me a bunch of SOBs if you want to. You know, God damn it, made it, you're going the wrong way and so forth and so on. I disagree vehemently and so forth and so on, and we're not going to be with you on this kind of thing. The way they deal with each other when they disagree. I mean, on strongly disagree on issues. Now, I've only frankly come to this realization in recent years. I didn't have time to sit down and analyze it then, when it was happening.
Yes,
I had to go on and get the problem solved, get the job done. And bruised feelings mattered a great deal to me. If anything, by the way, I would say that one of the great personal regrets that came out of my service with Mayor is what I believe to be the misperception of me among many or some white business leaders at the end of the first term, and their lack of willingness or lack of ability to come to grips with that from their perspective, what they had done not to help the problem, which carried over into a continuing semi-hostility. You know, we were there, we did business, it was always cordial. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever refused to shake hands or, you know, none of that kind of stuff.
But you were clearly the adversary.
Well, just, you know, not even that in the second term as much as had been the case in the first term.
But the more I read today is that they changed their opinion about you totally.
Well, I think that we both have grown up.
The comments by Dan Sweat and others, I listen to, I appreciate what you've done about that.
Yeah. We are the victims of a history of racism. Mm-hmm. And that has distorted the perception of oppressor and oppressed alike. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
As my grandpa Jackson once said, it differs in phase and not in kind, in a monograph he wrote, talking about the effect on oppressor and oppressed.
Racism has been effect, right? Of course.
What I regret also is how much time we lost.
Well, that's for sure.
Okay, now, one of the attractions of running for mayor again, of course, I don't have to be the first, emphasize the word first, black mayor again. And the other thing is, I've always philosophically been, and I've always lived in a manner consistent with the philosophy of integration as a means, and the primary means, to a society of equal opportunity and equal rights. So the people who are not qualified to judge me, to say that I'm anti-white, is particularly irksome.
What was your relationship with state government, Mr. Bush, back then?
Not bad. No hostility.
Yeah. Willing to work with you?
Yeah. Now, the degree to which we succeeded had its ups and downs.
Yeah.
But that is, in my opinion, a reflection of how our local delegations function.
You still got something from state government, more or less, than the white mayors have? There's no effort to ostracize you in any way.
No. In fact, I would say that we pretty much held our own. One of the biggest problems, one reason it's hard to gauge how we did compared to how white administrations had done, is that you didn't really have white mayors who went over to curry favor with the state anyhow, because they were offended by the anti-Atlanta sentiment that was pervasive in the state government. And didn't even bother with it. This is a generalization. I'm sure there are many exceptions to this. I'm sure the mayors all have met with the governor, all the mayors before I became mayor, and tried to do what they could do. But there is a great deal of writing on prior mayors Hartsfield and Allen and how they had their problems with the state and so forth. So did Macell. The Macell worked at better relations. Whether he succeeded or not is a matter of some debate, but I mean, he even put signs on City Hall yard saying, welcome state legislators, you know, facing the state capital as an indication of his determination to create better relationships. And
but you should know very different than that.
I would go over, and I'd just almost every legislative session, I think I missed maybe a couple of them, but I mean the opening day, but I was at every legislative session at one time or another while I was in office, and would go over and say hi to people, let them know that we very much appreciated what they were doing. We beefed up our lobbying action. Mm-hmm. Hired for the first time a full-time lobbyist over there. Had a table set up in the state capitol to handle the problems of legislators, whatever they were. Okay. And, you know, they wanted tickets for 30 school kids to go to the Atlanta Zoo. They got them for free.
Okay. The relations were kept there.
We worked hard at it, and we, I think, made some headway. But I think we might have made more headway if certain factors in the local delegation had existed, which would have made them a bit more powerful, a bit more persuasive with the state.
Mm-hmm. Let me get to the airport situation. I wanted a question on that.
And on that point, but the delegation did a lot for the city, too. But there were some things that were unclear about how we did with them.
Mm-hmm. I have 2 points on the airport situation. First, the idea to build a second airport in Henry County with a terminal in South Atlanta, which I proposed, or rather in Paulding County. Was this suggested as a way of redressing the neglect of the economy in the black sections of the city in the South Side?
No.
You didn't see it that way?
No. My decision, in my opinion, has, it may have that effect. And if so, that's great.
Especially with the terminal in South Atlanta, I tell you that was part of what you were trying to do there.
No.
No, okay.
Because if the present airport doesn't do it, a supplement to it is not going to make any difference. A supplement is farther away.
nonetheless, a second headquarters.
The south side, I'm talking about the south side of the city of Atlanta.
Right.
Okay. Now, I've never said Henry County. What I may have said was south of the Atlanta airport.
But the other suggestion
was could be Clayton, could be Henry, could be somewhere else, I don't know where.
And the terminal was to be in south. Right?
No, the terminal would be where it is now.
Well, I read the papers, the terminal was to be in south Atlanta.
No, we're talking about taking the present airport and keeping it.
Right, right, right.
Building a remote landing area.
Right. And then making a rail connection.
High speed, fixed rail, dedicated rail.
Right.
Into the present terminal.
The joint venture issue in regards to the airport, were there efforts to remove power from you as a result of this controversy, particularly to create, for example, an airport authority run by the state and method to bypass your authority? Was that suggested? Was that a reality?
Yes, that was discussed on the state side. It didn't happen. I saw it as a form of leverage used by certain people.
Mm-hmm.
The threat of it,
mm-hmm.
I think it was intended to back us off on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
We never allowed that to happen.
Was the state very interested in doing that or not?
Well, I think always there have been certain people on the state side who have wanted to do that. But the state cannot just take over the airport. We own it. Now, the state may get control of it through legal means. We'd have to sit down talking about whether we'd want that to happen or not.
So it was a possibility, but not a realistic possibility.
It never occurred to me as a realistic legal likelihood.
It was a power leverage against you.
Now, the other thing is that we have to remember that we in Atlanta are not alone in Georgia anymore.
Meanwhile,
the folks in Savannah are going to look at what the state government does. If the state government tries to take Atlanta's airport, why wouldn't it try to take Savannah's airport?
Mm-hmm.
Or Columbus's airport?
But the very fact that
there would be precedent for it,
mm-hmm.
Would cause the others to be deeply concerned about it. So I'm not at all sure that they would be able to engender any support from major urban centers around this country, around this state.
Oh, I don't think they would either, but the threat was made. That was,
well, that is correct, yeah.
And when there were white efforts given on the joint venture issue, did they give in with the idea of giving little else to black businesses? I mean, it was a very perfunctory type of giving in.
It was, in most cases, with teeth gritted, doing not more than the letter of the language required.
And this came from
all. And even then, there was resistance in every conceivable way by certain contractors. Not by all. Some contractors said, this is a reality. Whether I like it or not, I'm going to deal with it. Make the best out of it. Establish relationships and so forth. And they went on to do so. We had one company that resisted. I mean, it just became their passion to fight this all. It threatened us with everything they possibly could think of and went on, and we just said, okay, you know, if you want to do it, if you want to go to court, fine, we'll see you in court. But we're not going to back off on this policy because it's right and because it is a means and the most effective means we can think of at this point by which we can correct the wrongs of the past. That does not mean extra compensation. It means if the law and if the policies and the practices leading up to the time that we came into office were wrong, racist, unfair, and all the other kind of stuff. All the other kinds of negative descriptions that had to be corrected.
But the whites didn't see it.
And not just when you say the whites, let's be sure that you understand. I keep bringing it back to this point.
Right.
It's important to remember this. The white community was not and is not monolithic.
Who supported you on this issue?
The small white business people saw an opportunity to compete here too. And some, not all, who had been blocked out by the big boys, so to speak, you know, historically, because the big boys were using this rhetoric to keep the playing field just for themselves. This was not only a racial thing, this was the good old boy system, the good old boy network at its ultimate.
And by good old boys, you mean, what do you mean, the banks here?
Well, I don't know, whoever makes it the good old boy system. I don't need to get into defining who all they are, but the good old boys take care of each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not a good old boy, you're out. White, brown, or black, you're out.
Were there any of the big players who were supporting you on this issue and joined?
We got more small fight businesses involved in city government than ever before, too.
But how about some of the big shows?
Who supported us, I guess.
Were there? Not necessarily people involved in engineering and infrastructure. But
now, if by support you mean came out up front and said, we're with you on this, publicly declared that.
Either up front or behind the scenes. Who said, we're going to stick with you on this.
I cannot remember a single major white firm to do that.
Okay. Is this the point where your white friends walked out on you there?
Chronologically, it would be hard. I'd have to think back on where that actually happened. But it was about this issue. This was the major...
More so than pulling money out of the banks. So.
Well, that was part of this issue. Oh, yeah. That was the affirmative action thing. City contracts. They were managing $600 million of city money. And the city was predominantly black.
Right. So it was getting black...
It had nobody black on the boards, no black VPs, and that's a kind of a lower middle position in a bank.
Affirmative action in the banks and joint venture on construction and architectural projects. Those are the issues that the whites really bailed out, I suppose. The ones you thought were your supporters.
Yes, but let's redefine that issue. Let's put it this way. Economic integration. In other words, these attempts at economic integration.
Mm-hmm.
Caused the bailout more than anything else. Now, I must tell you, by the way, that we made our share of mistakes too in communications.
Mm-hmm.
When things got hot and heavy in terms of management, doing all that we had to do, I only had 8 years. I knew that I only had 8 years at most. So I'm unlike my predecessor. Remember that? Okay. I knew that my term, the maximum I could serve would be 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's assuming that I would be reelected. So I had to go on and get my job done.
Mm-hmm.
So there came a point beyond which it was not responsible to go on letting an issue rise. 18 months of negotiation with certain segments of the financial community.
But you were willing to let this go. I mean, you said there would be weeds growing in the airport before you changed your mind on this issue. And you came down,
no question,
pretty solidly on this issue.
That's precisely right.
Okay. That's where you made your
stand. And in effect, stood still for a year.
Right.
Now, obviously, I was deeply concerned about what the effect of that 1 year wait would be.
Mm-hmm.
Deeply concerned because I wanted to be sure that even though we were standing up for what was right, we also didn't lose ground and didn't lose money.
Sure, sure.
And as it turns out, we worked hard and we came out at the end of that year not only not losing money but having a better design and a better plan that saved $7 million over the prior plan.
The eventual result worked out wonderfully.
Yeah. It was not just a matter of luck, though. I want you to know that. That was our goal.
Well, I'm sure.
Our goal that year was to find a better way to do what we had been talking about.
At what point did the big business leaders
any or all of them come in behind you on this issue and say, okay, we're going to back you on joint venture, not stand in your way anymore. When they realize that you weren't going to budge?
No, that, what you just described did not happen. To the best of my recollection, that happened only in the second term.
They never backed joint venture.
In that first term.
In that first term.
Now, I could be mistaken, but I cannot remember that it happened in my first term that somebody said, okay, we're going to work with you on this kind of thing. The chamber never said a word in support of it.
Did they also oppose
it? CAP never said a word in support of it. I bet, at least in my first term, if they did after that, I can't remember when they did.
And they didn't back your re-election then, I suppose. If that was still sticking in the throat.
No, I had pretty good business support in my re-election effort here.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the business leaders.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
most.
Why?
Not
why?
All.
What, because they thought you would be re-elected and they might as well work with you?
I think that was one. I think the other thing was that there was the beginning of the grudging acceptance of the quality of leadership we were given.
So you did come around.
But I think that the practical side led. The practical realization of, hey, this guy's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
We got to do business.
Right.
Okay. Now, that's fine if that helps to open up the doors. I made my share of mistakes. I must tell you that I'm not limitless in my patience. And after a while, I feel like I'm running after folks to, hey, you know, say, hey, look at me, reasonable and honorable steps to build bridges. But if it gets to the point that I feel like I'm kind of beginning to scrape and bow to be accepted, I'm not prepared to go that far. I went right up to the edge on that, right up to the edge. I bit my tongue many a time. Swallowed my pride many a time. But never wrote off the business community. Now, some of them believe that, but I did. Never, ever, ever, ever did I do it, because my obligation was to serve them like it was to serve anybody else in line. And number two, the city moves better and is governed better.
Mm-hmm.
And serves the interests of the city long range better when the business community is a part of leading the change. So I was after that. I was working for that. There was not a meeting halfway. Not even 60% of the way at a certain point. I was determined not to let go of the commitment to seek the support of the business community. What I hit upon then, because I was then besieged with having to manage the change that came with a new charter, a recession. I mean, some of the people are blaming me for the problems the recession brought on them. That's what they're talking about. I'm running business out of Atlanta. I've never run anybody out of Atlanta.
Yeah, well,
now, if my being black caused some people to leave Atlanta, I can't help that. I mean, what am I supposed to do about that?
But that apparently was the problem with some of these people.
Just, well, that,
as you said, they could not accept
that was
relationship.
That was the place where the white leadership alone could turn the tide. I told them that too.
Yeah.
I said, if somebody is running out of Atlanta because I'm black, there's not a thing in the world I can say to them that I have already sent to. I've been to many people. When I would hear a rumor about so-and-so leaving, I'd go right to them. And we cut off several of those that I can name. Major engineering firm over here between 10th and 11th Street was getting ready to go. We would have met with them. What are your concerns? They told us. We responded. They were impressed. They stayed. Other firms, no, they were caught up. By the way, and you're talking about pressures. The real estate folks from I-285 in downtown Atlanta every day selling by all over work their space up on I-285, and then I get blamed when somebody leaves to get promised 2 years of free rent. So we need to understand that there's nothing that what line?
I mean, they're holding
40
on the outside line.
Okay. I need to take this. I've ever given out. I think that the more we talk, the more I kind of realize some things and become a bit more analytical. I've gotten to the point now I'm able to reflect.
Of course.
A bit more dispassionately on that period of time. What I was going to say to you, though, was that one of the mistakes that I made was in getting so slumped and having to become so preoccupied with solving the problems of managing all the change, getting government turned around and moving ahead.
Mm-hmm.
In this atmosphere of increased flight anxiety and increased black expectations, that to handle this question of communication with the power structure,
mm-hmm.
rather than calling 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people on every major issue, kind of as a base-touching thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for a shortcut and made a decision on that shortcut that was a mistake in retrospect. And it was to deal then primarily with the representatives of the power structure who were honorable, decent, able people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about Dan Sweat for CAP and his counterpart for the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we didn't always agree on everything, but we were talking the same language.
Mm-hmm.
They were people who had dealt with the public arena before. They had realistic expectations and knew how things happened in governments and all this kind of thing.
Very clear.
And it was a good relationship, not always agreeable in the sense that we always agreed on every issue. Because each of them represented a constituency, which I also had the obligation to kind of represent, but did not represent them exclusively, as they did.
So you're saying that rather than work through these representatives, you should have worked with the...
No question about it. There's no reflection on them.
Oh, yeah, I didn't...
Now, these guys did an excellent job, I'm sure, best they could under the circumstances, but what I'm saying is the greatest person in the world could not have done as effective a job in interpreting to the power structure as I could have done in a give and take session on a continuing basis.
Well,
a give and take sessions on a continuing basis.
Especially since the power structure wasn't even sure what they really were.
But when you lose the eyeball contact, the human element decreases. And that was a mistake. And one of the things I advised Andy when he came into office was not to make that mistake. There's no reflection. These guys are great, and there ought to be communication with them as the CEOs of these organizations. But to do that and therefore use that in place of direct communication with the major players was a strategic error on my part.
Part of their sense of your arrogance, I suppose?
Well, distance generates a perception of arrogance. Now, there are people who will say, well, I couldn't reach him. I'd get on the phone and I would hear this all the time when I was somebody, so-and-so said he couldn't reach him. I'd get on the phone and call, and I'd say, you're trying to reach him. Yes. We would get into when, they wouldn't want to talk about when, but I would kind of try to get them to tell me when they'd been trying to reach me. And in 80% of the cases, they finally said, well, actually, I didn't call because I knew I couldn't reach
perception.
And And some people say, yes, I did call. And sometimes we missed. But those times were few. I'm talking about in the 15% category, where we actually missed somebody's call. We tried real hard to relate. The other thing that we had to deal with is this. This is another point kind of standing back away from it long enough now to see some things that were going on, some of the dynamics that were going on. These men in powerful positions were accustomed to the mayor being their mayor and relating to them first and primarily. Now we have a mayor who wanted to be their mayor and everybody else's mayor too. Didn't want to be their boy, but wanted to be their mayor, their public servant, just like everybody else. And this new mayor did not relate first and primarily to them.
I guess that's the problem with Selma too.
Marcel, yes, I think Marcel had that problem too. Remember, he was the first mayor elected with only a minority of the white vote.
And he wasn't blessed by them.
Well, he was opposed by them.
Right.
Aggressively, they were in support of his opponents.
Right.
And Ivan Allen, in fact, about 10 or 11 days before the election came out and endorsed Councilman, I'm not blocking on his name, who was Republican, and of course these labels were not supposed to attack
Cook.
Rodney Cook, rather. But they went with the guy they thought was going to be their guy, and the other thing is that there were some people who were afraid, in the power structure, who were afraid of a relationship with certain people who were close to Sam. But that's all history.
Let me ask you one last thing. The issue involving Police Chief Inman, did that create, or did that split along racial lines in terms of support in the city council among the business community? Was the white community disturbed at all by the police brutality issue, as indicated by Inman?
That latter question is a very interesting question. This question ought to be asked 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. All over Atlanta. Should have been at that time. The answer has to be, I mean, this is not being critical, it's being analytical, has to be no. The majority of the white community was not deeply concerned about a police brutality issue. Now, that's not based on a poll, but it's based on a perception that they had the power and they didn't do anything about it. Now, do I believe that most whites don't care about police brutality? No. I think that most whites do care about police brutality.
But it wasn't high on their list.
Well, they didn't believe it.
They didn't believe it.
No, I don't think they believed it. And number two, it was not high on their list for various other reasons. But I think that the reason that it was not high on their list, see, if you believe that it's going on, if you are an ethical person, you've got to have it high on the list, right? So not high on the list, so how do you rationalize that? I honestly believe the majority of whites in Atlanta believe that the allegations about police brutality were lies.
For so many years.
And believe the police, without question, when they made statements about how these things happened. That was a mistake. One of the great breakthroughs was for Wade Mitchell, Trust Company Bank, City of Atlanta Alderman, on the police committee, to hear a white police officer finally break down and testify that this black man was shot on Peachtree Street near the Crawford Lawn Hospital, and that he saw this other cop plant either a knife or a gun. It was a small Saturday Night Special in the dead black man's hand. Well, I was vice mayor, so I had to be between 70 and 74. It was approximately 72. Okay?
Mm-hmm. So even with that, though.
And then for Wade Mitchell to hear. See, Wade was Georgia Tech All-American quarterback, banker, blessed with the mantle of the power structure, and a very decent, smart man, and a courageous man once he saw the truth. He had the guts to search for the truth, too. Because in a meeting in the police committee where I was president, I served as vice mayor when the mayor was not president and voting. The mayor was 99% not president and voting, so I made that one of my activities on the police committee. And when Wade and I and the other members of the police committee heard his testimony, that in his opinion, a majority of the Atlanta police, I forgot what he said, whether it was 40%, 50%, 60%, somewhere, but a significant number, maybe the majority of Atlanta police, carried a drop knife or a drop gun. They even had names for them. Drop knife and drop gun. Yeah. Just for this purpose, to plant these things on people they had shot wrongfully.
So even when
Wade's conscience was not
anybody's with him.
Now, that revelation is the kind of revelation that it would take to move the average citizen, the average white citizen, off of assuming that everything any police officer said was the gospel truth, to the point of questioning whether or not, to the point of questioning what is the truth in a given case. Let's wait until all the facts are there.
Okay, but even with that, when the Inman situation came up, basically that split along racial lines, didn't it?
Well, my discharge of Inman,
police brutality was an issue there too.
No question. My discharge of Inman was seen by many people as being an attempt to fire a white chief. The interesting thing is that when I hired the next chief, who also was white, in later years, that was forgotten.
But of course, you had created a super chief.
Because Reggie dominated the perception, Reggie Eves. And so the perception was you fired him to get Reggie Eves in. Oh, brother. I'm not going to tell you everything. You're going to write my book. I've already told you too much.
Well, this is great to hear from me. I saw one thing in the Atlanta Voice.
What do you plan to do with this?
Oh, work on a book. I mean, this is it's really a study of race relations in 20th century Atlanta. I really think it went back to really stop at the 1906 riot and take it forward from there. In fact, about a month ago, I was down in Orleans looking at your grandfather's papers.
Really?
Yeah, it was very interesting.
And the, what's the name of these?
It was the Amistad.
Yeah, Amistad, right. That's, you know, it's regrettable we don't have somebody in Atlanta who wanted to take care of those papers, like Amistad.
Huh? I'm amazed you didn't.
Well, you know where Dr. Mays's papers have gone.
Yeah, Howard.
Yeah. Now, the point is, if AU couldn't do it, either didn't have the capacity or didn't know how to do it, what about Georgia State?
Well,
what about
State,
Emory University?
Emory has a very good collection of.
I mean, you know, we're losing, so you see my point is, there's not the level of interest in a legitimate major piece of Atlanta history that there ought to be.
I agree. I was very surprised that papers were all over the country like this.
I wish you well.
Well, thank
you. Sounds like it would be a very...